Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. Number to call after the top of the hour with questions or comment for our guest is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you pose your question live on the radio. Let's see. Any other instructions? Vote today, by all means. Get the vote in by 8 o'clock and then listen to it count here, beginning our coverage tonight at 7:30. In the meantime, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Mayor Sarah Bristol and City Councilor Vanessa Ogier. Ladies, thank you for appearing today. Glad to have you with us here. What's on the agenda for the Grants Pass City Council right now? It feels like kind of a quiet time of year. You can't nod your head. It's radio.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yes.
There is not a lot of exciting things to the end of the year. I think one thing worth mentioning is on November 12th, a Tuesday evening at 6 p.m., we will have an Urban Renewal Agency Community Forum. And this is this falls in line with the council implementing a five-year implementation strategy for our urban renewal agency and getting those projects prioritized and more heavily focused on. So this is a time for the community to show up and let us know what you think of the projects and let us know what's on your mind regarding the urban renewal agency.
All right. Are those projects posted anywhere where we can assess them early?
We do have a website on, we do have a landing page on the City of Grants Pass website for the Urban Renewal Agency, and this will give you information on what exactly the agency is, how long it will be in play for, you know, where the money comes from, where the money goes, and also the list of projects.
Oh, all right. Mayor, you want to weigh in? What are you dealing with here on a daily basis now?
Yeah, well, just to piggyback on that idea of the Urban Renewal Agency, I do hope that we'll get some public participation and hear more about maybe certain parts of town that that the community wants us to focus on for some exciting new projects. The Urban Renewal Agency is limited to a specific area in town, but it does cover most of the kind of North 6th and 7th Street corridor through downtown and then some parts of Redwood and Rogue River Highway. So it's a pretty good part of the business district, but we can use those funds to get some new projects going and to work on urban renewal and cleaning up some underdeveloped parts of town. So I hope to hear more from the public about that. We also do, as you know, we talk about the homeless here quite a bit. And
we do, yes.
We do have those temporary sites established right now that we set up to move people out of the parks, but those sites are temporary. So we do need to continue discussing what we're going to do in the long term, and the council will have another discussion about that at the November 18th workshop in about 2 weeks. So we, there's always stuff going on behind the scenes, and that's definitely one of them. The largest site right now that we're using for the homeless is the site of the water treatment plant that we're planning to break ground on next spring. So we do need to come up with another plan to move people to another location, within about 6 months at least. So that's definitely very much on the table here.
From a news standpoint, the J Street area and the homeless situation has really gone relatively quiet. We still see the same reports of people being evicted or at least notified that they're trespassed from the park for various things. But overall, it's been kind of quiet. And is there a reason for that? Is there someone, an area we need to point to?
Well, I think it's been very successful as far as getting the majority of people out of the parks and giving the parks back to the community. We're kind of moving into a time right now of lower use in the parks as things get cooler and rainy, right? But as far as that goes, I think the project was very successful. We are hearing complaints about things, activity in the J Street neighborhood. And so I don't want to minimize that because I know for the neighbors in that area, it's been some significant, increase in activity from what they had going on historically and some more people, I guess, in the downtown area, moving between the two sites. And, so those are all things that we're aware of and taking into consideration and working on how to best improve security and safety for those areas. But overall, I think that it has done what we intended it to do, which was to move people out of the parks, but neither of the sites are meant to be a long-term solution either. And certainly as it's raining now and, you know, we're seeing complaints from kind of the humanitarian perspective, I guess, of having people live in a muddy open field in the rain is not ideal. So we're continuing to work on that. We're not turning a blind eye to it for sure.
To the best of your knowledge, either one of you, is the homeless population adhering to the rules in terms of staying in either one of those designated locations, or are they filtering out slowly but surely into other areas where they might be less noticeable but still outside of the realm of being inside a homeless area?
I think that's always going to exist, even pre city designated campsites. I think that there is certainly an invisible homeless population that will attempt to rest wherever they can be unseen. We know that largely the folks that were in the parks are now in the campsites. And I have heard that there is an increase in usage just outside of the city limits, like the B Street Devil's Slide area. I have heard an increase of people camping out in that direction. And so that's really the idea behind a low barrier shelter, is that it would immediately separate those that want help and those that do not. And so this was really just the first step to get people out of the parks so that the community could have their parks back. And hopefully we can segue into something that will make it even more clear for those that want to get out of homeless and those that do not.
Low barrier shelter has been a controversial topic ever since it was initiated. Where do we stand right now, at least from the city council standpoint, either one of you?
I think largely the misunderstanding around low barrier shelter has been this idea that maybe they don't have rules or maybe that it's a free-for-all, but neither of those are true. I think Rogue Retreat is one of the best local low barrier shelters that we have to look to in terms of success rates, in terms of how they operate their program and how long they've been doing it for with success and their expansion as well. They have their rules posted on their website, and you know, it's like a page and a half of rules. So I want to make it really clear that these are managed sites. They are not free-for-alls. What we have right now is an unmanaged site. And it's not an ideal situation, but thankfully it is temporary. And like the mayor had said, we are working behind the scenes to hopefully have something like that up and running. And we'll know more on November 18th in terms of how to segue out of what we have now into hopefully something that is more managed.
Do I infer from your comments that we are looking at an area or at a location for a low barrier shelter? Do we have a building in sight? Or is it too early to tell yet?
To be honest, I've been looking at locations for 4 years. So yes.
Here's a pension for the obvious folks. All right. But we don't have one isolated that we're looking at right now specifically.
I think that there's a few that, you know, that we've been looking at because we know that what we have right now is temporary. The police station is less temporary because that is city-owned property that we don't have plans to expand on quite yet. But we know that the J Street site, we're going to need to be breaking ground soon. We actually will be having, on December 2nd, I wanted to mention that we'll have the water treatment plant guaranteed maximum price discussion. And so not only will that project be coming more to a head, but we'll actually have an exact number of what that project will cost us.
Okay, let's talk about the, if we're talking about the homeless and a low barrier shelter, once we do establish a low barrier shelter, if in fact we do, would that close those temporary parks? Is that the idea behind it? And do we have an area that's large enough to accommodate the population of homeless?
Yes, I would say that is the goal, is to be able to close both of these sites. We do need to, I guess, determine how many people would want to go to a location. And obviously, Mint has been working on the Parker Place location next to Bi-Mart, for quite a few months now. I think that's pretty widely known. The city has helped, pave the way for that and approve them for a number, I think it's 20 pallet shelters that they're planning to have in back right now, as well as eventually a congregate shelter. And they've been operating as a navigation center throughout the summer as they provided a cooling center. So, we are continuing to talk with Mint about what their plans are. And so that could be one location. We've also discussed the Washington and Morgan location that was the former Aspire building as being a site, and that site was used last winter for a winter warming shelter operated by UCAN. The tricky thing is, yes, some locations have more capacity than others, right? And so I think the goal would be to have a managed facility, probably just one ideally, because anytime you start splitting, you need more staff and things get more complicated. But it's in flux, I guess, depending on money, depending on partners who we work with, depending on council willingness to go through, with a particular option. But we're not quite to the point of having one singular focus yet. But I think the goal would definitely be to close both of those outdoor unmanaged locations and have only managed facilities with some rules, like Council President OJ said. And then we would have just the one site, and there are more. I guess I don't want to say it's just one site. OnTrack has been working on opening a facility that would be a temporary housing stop for people who are on a waiting list to get into long-term treatment or residential treatment for addiction. And the city provided some money to them a couple of years ago now, and they're working on getting that open. I've heard it's supposed to open sometime around the beginning of the year. So, that would house, I think the idea was 8 to 12 people at the time it was, brought to the council's attention. It's been about 2 years now, I think, since we've discussed it. But that would house a number of people while they're waiting to get into a residential treatment program. And so there are other facilities around town, right, that also work on the homeless situation. I know the Gospel Rescue Mission is planning to open a kind of cottage village on Harbeck that would help with some senior housing, and they obviously already have their current facility. So, it's not just one thing, right? But I think what we need to be able to provide here in Grants Pass is to be able to show the state that we are offering objectively reasonable choices for people to have a place where they can sleep, and then we can make a rule that they can't sleep on our sidewalks, on our medians, in our parks, as long as we have those objectively reasonable options. And so whatever the mix is, we want to make sure that we have substantial options for people. And then we'll say that you can't sleep in our parks and on our right of ways.
All right. Well, I know that's certainly the goal. Let's deal with Mint, first of all, with those pellet shelters that have been going up, or supposed to have gone up. And we've been talking about this for some time. I'm under the impression that it doesn't take much to put a pellet shelter up. Has there been a delay there? And is there one, is the city standing in the way for any code reasons, or what is the status there?
Yeah, they're working through the process. I think that it is harder than popping up a tent, right? So they are working through. They need to make sure that they have electrical to those units and that they have a flat surface to put them on and that they meet codes, that they have restroom facilities for people to use and things like that. So they've been working through all those issues over the past several months. I don't think that there's anything particularly holding them up, except that it has been a volunteer organization, right? And so I know they felt very distracted, especially when we did, when people moved out of the parks and into these two sites, and it was, unfortunately, there were a couple of heat waves, and Mint's volunteers were working to provide shade, and they worked in cooperation with UCAN, and they got some shade and water to those two sites, and they were for a while delivering water bottles on a daily basis to people before they got a larger tank established. And so anytime you spend your time, in one way like that, it distracts you from working on your long-term vision of getting the ongoing site open. So there were some delays in that sense, but I don't think there's a hang up per se. You know, it's just things take a little bit of time.
Right. We understand government works slow, and so does some of the other organizations. In the meantime, moving on to that low barrier shelter, certainly that's a goal. It has been for a long time for the city. Do we have a budget set up for a low barrier shelter, or will that budget just come from what we're paying for these two campgrounds right now? And would that be enough? And I understand it's right about $250,000 annually. Is that accurate, and is that going to be enough for a low barrier shelter?
It seems as though the city will have to at first pony up what it would take to help get it started. Not necessarily the entire amount, but like other communities across the state, local communities usually have to have some sort of initial buy-in, and then from there, once the state sees that buy-in, and the project has a plan, the project has, you know, operating costs lined up, the project has, you know, a location, it has the workforce needed for it, that's usually when the state comes in and really begins to provide some heavy assistance. That's what I've observed in other communities across the state. But that initial buy-in from communities usually is required.
Yeah, that initial buy-in, and then Rogue Retreat would take over. At least that's the general plan. With state monies. Is that $250,000 that we're spending on the parks right now enough for that initial buy-in?
I wouldn't say that it would necessarily be Rogue Retreat. It would definitely be an operator that's not the city, right? And we have a couple of different...
Rogue Retreat, just as an example.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Rogue Retreat is certainly capable of doing it. Mint has expressed some interest. You Can also has been operating a homeless shelter in Roseburg, and they... might be able to do so here. So that, I think we're not fixed on any one partner, but yes, I think I personally see it as it's a kind of a chicken and the egg problem of what comes first. And really what we're, I guess to explain that, the city doesn't have the money readily available to establish and operate something. And yet what we're hearing from people working with the state is that the state doesn't provide the, the startup funds. And so it will become an obligation of the city to find and secure a location. And then you can develop a plan, because if you don't have a location, you don't know, will it house 40 people? Would it house 100 people? Is it indoors? Is it outdoors? Are you providing, what sort of resources are you providing? And so you have to have that location secured in order to get the state money. And fortunately, it's hard to get that location secured when you don't have the state money, right? So that's where the chicken and the egg comes in. But I think at this point, we've realized that we do need to figure out the location and develop the plan. And then, from there, hopefully we could get some state assistance. It is unclear right now what the path for funding from the state would be for 2025 and beyond. There was, some monies last year that were available, and Grants Pass didn't receive any of that, but it won't necessarily be the same funding pathway, I guess, in the future. And so that's always kind of part of the rules are shifting on you. And we hear a lot about billable expenses, and that some things are considered health care or can be supplemented through the state if you provide a certain type of housing. And some things are considered transitional housing, and some things are considered emergency shelter, and some things, for navigation services or outpatient services, you can get certain types of money. And so there's just this really complex funding matrix at play, and it's always a little shifty too, and that's part of what's made this very hard.
I really didn't intend for our conversation to take this long on this particular topic again, but somehow we always seem to fill a lot of time here. One final question, we'll move on to some other topics here in a moment or two, but we've talked about emergency shelters, and we're in that period where the rains are coming in and we're seeing frost appear. Do we have any contingency plans right now for an emergency shelter, other than what Mint is providing?
Right now, at this time, Mint is not actually operating as a shelter. They're operating as a navigation center, but they don't have people staying overnight. However, yes, we do have an RFP out right now for a winter warming shelter. I believe the deadline is the end of this week for organizations to submit their proposal. to the city. I believe that meant was going to. I don't know for sure that they have, but that they are planning, you know, last I spoke to them about 2 weeks ago, to operate a winter warming shelter again. And they are in talks with UCAN, which also operated a shelter last year. And the organizations are definitely working together to try to provide and make sure that people are taken care of over the winter.
Is there a tentative location yet?
Well, I guess the last time I spoke with Mint, they were thinking of the Parker Place location next to Bi-Mart.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm not sure. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that. I'm sure you'll keep us informed. In the meantime, we're going to take just a little break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, obviously, it's getting to be that time of year, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you'll stay with us for all the fun for Santa's grab bag coming up. In the meantime, we have in studio Mayor Bristol and City Council President Vanessa Ogier. Ladies, on another topic, this workshop dealt with primarily what's going on with private streets and how the city is interfacing with the contractors. And I'm sure that a lot of our population out there doesn't realize that there are really private streets out there. You can notice with the color of the street signs which are private streets and which are not. But there are rules, and we're dealing with a lot of, I think, essentially fire codes to try to keep everybody safe with those streets. Can you briefly outline what we were talking about yesterday during your workshop?
Yeah, this is a larger discussion of working closely with our Home Builders Association and asking them to come to us in regards to things that are not working for housing development in our community. And one of the issues that they brought up was the city restrictions and code requirements for private streets. And although those streets are privately owned and maintained, the city does still have to, like you said, for fire code reasons and for public safety reasons, they do have requirements on them that there is a specific, you know, cap on housing that is to be built. And so the home builders came to us and asked, you know, can we have that cap raised, because there is the middle housing code that came down from the state, which basically blew the doors off on density and allowed for some real density to be implemented in communities. And so they asked for us to raise the density allowances on those private streets. And we heard some concerns from our community development department and as well as our new fire chief that, you know, you need specific street widths and you need specific allowances for support on the sidewalk or on the sides of the street if it's no less than 20 feet wide for a fire truck to be able to get in there and do the work that they need to do. So all parties came together and came up with a recommendation that we decided to move forward with yesterday.
And it's ongoing, ladies and gentlemen, and we're ongoing too. We'll be back right after news. Rural Metro. Here being KAJO, 1270 AM, 99.7 on the FM band, and on the World Wide Web at KAJO.com. Tuesday talk show continues. The number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest this morning is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you pose your question or comment live to our guest. Our guest today, Mayor Sarah Bristol and City Councilor Vanessa Ogier. Ladies, once again, welcome back to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Glad to have you with us today. We talked about, of course, put our time in on the homeless situation in the last half hour. Let's move ahead a little bit right now. You have a fairly lengthy agenda tomorrow night with the City Council. But as I was going through that, it looks like that agenda might not take very long to get through. It looks like it's a lot of housekeeping situations. What should people be aware of tomorrow night in terms of how that's going to affect them from the Grants Pass City Council standpoint? Either one of you. Go ahead.
Yeah, some of it is surely housekeeping in terms of like renewing medical and dental insurance for city employees. But I think one thing worth really giving a shout out to is the Housing Advisory Committee came to us and asked for an amendment with their membership for that committee. And the Jackson County Housing Authority position, it is slated to be dissolved. The individual that was holding that seat had to resign for whatever reason, and Jackson County Housing Authority cannot put someone in their place to replace them. So they decided just to make the request to dissolve that seat. And I think that Jackson County Housing Authority deserves a huge shout out for how much they've partnered with our Josephine County Housing Authority. Jackson County is a lot stronger and they have a lot more experience developing housing in Jackson County. And so they, years ago, brought that expertise to Josephine County with our Housing Advisory Committee and other projects that we've worked on. And they've made it a point to help make our Josephine County Housing Authority stronger. So I'd like to give them a huge shout out for all of that work that they've done. They deserve a huge kudos.
All right. In your opinion, how will that affect citizens here in Josephine County? Adversely, not at all? What do you expect?
I think it's really important that the council looks to replace that with another expert on low-income affordable housing that, like the mayor had mentioned earlier in terms of homelessness funding, that is very much the same for low-income housing. It is certainly a matrix of funding, and it can be pretty complicated to navigate. So when the Housing Advisory Committee is talking about policy, it's important to have someone there that can understand the actual the policy implementation of the actual approach of what that would look like once implemented in terms of, you know, the funding that's needed, the timelines for things like that, the community partnership. So as long as we can have that expert replaced with someone that is knowledgeable there, I think it should be pretty seamless.
All right. All that being said, let's move on down the agenda. Anything else catch your eye that people should be concerned about? They're looking.
I guess, find tomorrow night's agenda particularly riveting. On this idea of housing, though, I think, and committee participation, I guess, are both two interesting topics. We do have a number of city advisory committees, and we tend to get not that many people applying for those positions. They're oftentimes not a huge time commitment. The committees tend to meet once a month. Sometimes they do have subcommittees, and then the Urban Area Planning Commission meets twice a month, and that one is a fairly substantial time commitment in a quasi-judicial format. But most of the committees, we do want a variety of people from the community to participate in those, and it's a good way to learn about your community and how city government works and get to know other people. So we have things, Parks Advisory Committee, Housing Advisory, Bikeways and Pathways. So there's a variety of different interests that people can find. There's a new sustainability committee that was set up in the last couple of years, maybe 1 year now. Tourism Advisory Committee, there's all kinds of different things, you know, so I think people can find something that they're interested in. And it's a good just foot in the door. Budget Committee is more of a short-term commitment that typically is in May, a series of weekly meetings over the course of just a month, as well as a couple of training sessions earlier. And, I guess I know a lot of people don't have a very good understanding of the city budget and the way it works, and so participating in something like that is a good way to learn more about how city government does work. And then I guess as far as housing goes, I guess just a shout out as well to the Housing Advisory Committee and Jackson County Housing Authority, which helped establish the Cathedral Square apartments that are off Harbeck and Grandview over by South Middle School. And I think there's 56 units there, I want to say, and that is a project that has been built in the last couple years entirely, you know, start to finish, and the Jackson County Housing Authority was the lead on that. The city helped partner on that, and it was the first substantial multifamily complex like that that had been built in Grants Pass in many years. So that's one of the things that the council over the past several years has been focusing heavily on, because housing availability is one of the things that is causing some of our homelessness situation, but it's also affecting, you know, everybody is just having a hard time finding availability of places to rent and buy, and prices are steep, and we need more housing stock. And that's one of the reasons why we were meeting with the Home Builders Association and talking about private streets, is because we don't necessarily have large acres of land to build big projects on, but infill is one way that we can just tuck in a few, you know, extra duplexes, triplexes, quads, you know, here and there, and try to increase our housing availability. And it doesn't get necessarily all the talk that the homelessness situation has, because there's not necessarily the outrage, right, of for having people camp in the parks. It's not as visible, but it's a huge problem. And I know I've heard from any number of different types of companies and businesses that they have difficulty recruiting and retaining staff, up through doctors and people who are very, you know, fairly well paid, and just can't find what they're looking for at a price that they can afford here in Grants Pass. And so we want to work on that, and we have been aggressively working on getting more housing going, not necessarily just that low-income affordable housing, but things that would be affordable to all of us who are working people.
Okay, so I know that there are several projects on the drawing board right now. Do we have any further word on any of those projects going on? I know there's one north of town. There's several within the city that are still on the drawing board or not quite shovel-ready yet, but close. Do we have any further information?
I don't have any further information at this time. We know that once the city improves, you know, their financial incentives, it's really up to the home builders from there. And so that's why it's important to prioritize housing yesterday and today always, because it takes so long to actually have the houses built. It can take years and years for a development like that, like what was previously mentioned, to be built. So I don't have any word on
all right, we'll keep an eye on that, and we have some other topics to talk about. First of all, we want to thank you all for listening. This is the Tuesday Talk Show. Number to call, 541-472-1270, and we'll continue after this word.
Fall is here.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Number to call, if you have a question or comment for our guest, 541-472-1270. Now, in your Monday workshop there, you also dealt with the FEMA's pre-implementation compliance measures, and this could have a significant effect on a lot of people locally, but a lot of people might not be aware of what's going on with that situation. Can you bring us up to speed on these FEMA pre-implementation compliance measures?
Yeah, this is an attempt for FEMA to, have additional compliance with the environmental protection standards of animals in our that, you know, cohabitate in our waterways, such as salmon, Chinook, those that are endangered or stressed species. And so they basically are coming up with these rules that communities are having to comply with. They're saying that if communities don't comply with this, that these communities wouldn't qualify for federal disaster aid if, you know, heaven forbid something disastrous happened to our community, and that we also wouldn't be able to participate in floodway insurance programs. So essentially the city, it is a federal mandate that the city is having to go along with. And so they are giving us three separate options on how to develop within those waterways. And so we heard about it yesterday for the first time in our workshop, the first time in a workshop format. And so staff is going to come forward with a recommendation in a couple of weeks. And there is a pretty tight turnaround in terms of when FEMA expects that we will adopt one of the options. I think it's by December sometime of this year.
So I heard early December is the line drawn in the sand. Do you have an idea? I know it's early in this situation. Can you outline those three options that the city is facing?
Yeah, the first one is an outright moratorium on housing development in those waterways. And it's pretty significant because, you know, as you can imagine, a river runs through our entire community. So that one was pretty large. The second was,
I think that's the 100-year floodplain is what we're looking at. So it goes back a substantial distance from what you might think of as the river bank.
Mm-hmm.
The second option is to create a local code specific for this, and that would incorporate the Endangered Species Act, which basically says that we would we would have to include, like, if you cut a tree down in this waterway, you know, how are you going to mitigate the fallout from, you know, species that need that tree for their own well-being? So that would be basically creating a model code, option two. And option three would be putting really the onus on the developer to come up with their own mitigation plan and to come up with their own assessment on how their development would, you know, hurt that waterway. So okay. Those are the three options.
Those are the three options that we're facing right now. Federal mandate in early December. Will this end up in the courts, and will we be part of that?
My crystal ball is not serving me
it's
now.
It's foggy?
It's foggy.
Froggy, as we say, right?
You know, got all those frogs jumping around in your crystal ball. I'm never going to live this one down.
It's hard to say. You know, it's strange right now in that it's the deadline is coming up awfully fast. And so I think cities across the state are trying to get a handle on what this means in their communities. It was a topic at the League of Oregon Cities Conference that several of us attended earlier this month. I didn't happen to catch that particular workshop, but, you know, it's something that we're just having to get up to speed on pretty quickly and figure out what way will be best for our community. But I think most communities in Oregon, you know, have rivers and streams and coastline that are affected by a 100-year floodplain. And so we don't want to prohibit development within that 100-year floodplain, because it does in some cases go back, you know, a substantial way from the traditional riverbank. And you know, obviously a lot of people like to have a nice view of the river, whether it's at their home or a restaurant. And so we have to figure out how to make a rule that makes sense for development, but also makes sense for ecology of the species that would be affected, and also not have people building in a way that's potentially dangerous or disastrous when that flood comes.
Did this come as a surprise? Did we see this one coming?
It wasn't something on my radar, for sure. You know, there's always a variety of things that cities are dealing with at any one time. And I think that's one of the things, you know, not everything is going to be of interest, you know, to each individual. And, you know, we do have eight city councilors and the mayor and staff, you know, who are experts in their field in a number of different directions. And so, you know, we're always grappling with different issues. And, yeah, sometimes they're not something that's maybe top of, you know, your particular pet project or interest, right? But they are something that you just have to get up to speed on fairly quickly and make a decision. And so, yeah, we just heard kind of an introduction to it yesterday. And then actually the new staffer who was presenting the presentation was immediately going to attend a webinar on the topic. I think she was presenting to us at, you know, 12:45 and planning to attend a webinar at 1. So she wrapped.
So she knows more about it right now.
She knows more about it today than she did at the time she was speaking to us yesterday. And so we will obviously have to come back at it again in the next couple of weeks here, because right now the deadline was the beginning of December, and there was kind of a default. What do they call it? Project to project? Is that what they called it, Vanessa?
Permit to permit.
Permit to permit. If you do not select one of those three options, there's a default that will be applied to us, you know, if we miss that deadline. So, and that might be fine. We don't know enough, I guess, yet to say.
All right. But the key here is, if we don't do something, something will be done for us. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is we could lose the opportunity for that FEMA insurance should a catastrophic flood happen or the Cascadia subduction event should occur. We would be without their support.
That's right.
That's true. And we have seen, you know, we do know that the Rogue River runs right through the middle of town as well as, you know, these streams. I grew up right on the banks of Gilbert Creek, and I have seen it flood all the way up to the street level, even though it's, you know, typically further down. And so here, you know, even in my lifetime, I was here in the New Year's Eve of 96 when we had, you know, substantial rains.
And, me too.
And yeah, the house I was staying in got hit by a mudslide and we had to evacuate in the middle of the night, you know. So things, you know, things do happen and we have to be prepared for those disasters as best we can, right? You never know exactly what's going to happen, but to the extent that you're able, you need to try to be prepared, and so that's what we're going to look at here.
Right, that's something for, of course, the city councilors and all of the citizens to keep an eye on, too. That's the FEMA pre-implementation compliance measures, and I'm assuming that we'll hear a lot about that during certainly workshops and probably city council meetings upcoming. Once again, city council meeting tomorrow night at 6:30. Pardon me.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. 6 o'clock in city council meeting. What should people be prepared for tomorrow night?
Yeah, again, you know, tomorrow night's not not the most exciting meeting. We're looking at a property line vacation for the RV park that's planned to be at Agnes. And, you know, it's that Agnes, people will know it as the old Greyhound Station, that property is on the verge here of being developed as an RV park. And it's a couple of different properties that very frequently when something like this happens, the property owner, you know, looks to merge those property lines into one. And so that's what we're looking at there. As Vanessa stated earlier, we're looking at amending the Housing Advisory Committee membership. We do have later in the meeting a couple of appointments to committees for the Parks Advisory Committee and the Housing Advisory Committee. Yeah, and just some basic housekeeping things. We have some agreements, we're, you know, taking maybe a step forward on the water treatment plant project, just some, you know, different maintenance, landscaping contracts, you know, some things the city council just has to sign off on, certain matters of business, you know, that are outside the purview of the city manager's job. And so, a number of small things like that.
All right, that's all coming up tomorrow night. And, of course, your attendance at city council meetings is always welcome, and there is always an opportunity to address the council, and kudos for that.
I'll give a little plug for later in the month, since I won't be back probably before then, but it is Thanksgiving month, and we do Small Business Saturday. Has been a trend for, you know, maybe at least 10 years now, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Of course, the Friday after Thanksgiving is Black Friday, and people kind of traditionally have gone to a lot of big box stores or Amazon sales for things like that. But small businesses here in Grants Pass, you know, we have a fantastic downtown, I think, with lots of great restaurants and little shops, and it's really a gem, one of the best downtowns in Oregon. And so Small Business Saturday, we're going to declare a proclamation at the November 20th council meeting. But the really important thing is for people both that day and all days to remember our small businesses. And if you value local restaurants and local shops and something, spend some money there, you know, and don't give it all away to other communities.
You'll find those unique gifts coming up for later in December.
You will, and the money that we spend here in our community recirculates in our community, you know, because if you go down to G Street or 6th Street and you buy something at one of those shops there, and then those people go and buy lunch at one of the restaurants next door, and it stays in our community, whereas when you're spending your money at a big box store or especially online, as convenient as that is, you're sending the money somewhere else and not helping keep our economy strong here in Grants Pass. So just give a little plug to small businesses
right
here.
That sounded almost like a sign-off, Mayor. Is there anything else before I give Vanessa equal time?
No, give the time to the counselor.
All right, go for another minute.
I did want to segue on something that the mayor had mentioned earlier, that there is, you know, usually always committee openings. We have 13 city committees and we have 9 committees with openings right now. So I can assure you, if you have an interest, you know, somewhere civically speaking, that there is a committee for you. I also did want to shout out, we are making some great progress on our Owl Lot Plaza, our downtown revitalization plaza project. There will be a brick program where you could buy a brick with your name or a loved one's name and have it in perpetuity downtown. So stay tuned for more on that. And we also have our strategic planning coming up in the month of December. We like to hear from the community of what their priorities would be for the next year. So please start thinking now what you'd like the council to work on next year so that you can let us know in December.
All right. Thank you very much, Mayor and Councilor. We appreciate it. Good luck. We'll see you tomorrow night on the dais. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.